seasons start getting warm. The trees and the grass start looking fresh, and the sun in the sky be looking at best. Birds be singing, flowers be blooming, a lot of brand new cars be zooming. Fly girls looking the best they could be, and the guys be duking, and you see. Besides all that, I like the warm weather.
Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, May 9th, 2018, and you're listening to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here with fellow beat reporter Tom Silverstein. It is raining buckets here in Green Bay today, which is why the players, when they have their practices, they're inside the Hudson Center, which is where we were over the weekend. Tom, another thrilling, enthralling rookie minicamp. Were you just on the edge of your seat like I was?
Oh, it was exciting. A lot of hitting going on, mostly between reporters.
So the Packers had their rookie orientation last weekend. We were able to watch practice on Friday, and we were able to talk to some of the players Friday and Saturday. Now there's a little bit of a gap before OTAs start around May 20th or May 21st. And so Tom and I are going to just sort of set up the stage for the spring and summer portion of the Packers workouts here. And so let's just sort of go position by position, and let's start with the quarterbacks. Now, you got a chance to talk to Tim Boyle, the undrafted guy they brought in from Eastern Kentucky, and then they've got Brett Hundley and DeShone Kizer, and of course Aaron Rodgers. So those are probably going to be the four, and that's what their pattern has been, right? Four guys going into just about every training camp?
Pretty much, yeah. I think they might have had five at some point, but not in training camp, probably in the off season. And four is standard, and it gets them through the preseason games and training camp practice, because Rodgers doesn't play in the preseason games. So really they're dealing with three, at least from the standpoint of the preseason games. So yeah, four is what they'll do. And Boyle is their Joe Callahan, their Scott Tolzien, their Graham Harrell. He's one of those guys they want to look at and see if they can develop.
Now, you know, just in the short time I've been here, I've seen a number of different types of guys that they've brought in with this spot. You know, of course, you had Joe Callahan, who was, you know, a Division III player that they wanted to test out. Now you have Tim Boyle, who played at UConn in Eastern Kentucky and is more of a drop-back passer. We saw the quarterback from North Carolina, Marquise Williams, who is much more mobile and not a very accomplished thrower. So what is sort of the philosophy behind choosing this fourth guy? How do they decide what kind of player they want to bring in?
Well, so I wrote about Tim Boyle and did a story on him and kind of looked back at some of the guys that they've really tried to develop. More recently, they've gone for some athletic guys, but in the past, it's been, you know, these cerebral quarterbacks who've been prolific passers, guys who've just been really intelligent, guys less physically gifted, guys they thought that could run their offense right away and possibly give them something in a backup situation. With Boyle, they're going for a true drop back passer with a cannon of an arm, off the charts athletic ability. I compared his testing numbers with Aaron Rodgers, and they're comparable and better in some areas. Doesn't have the mobility, flexibility, and that kind of thing that Rodgers does. But they're starting off with a guy who has the athletic talent and the mechanics to be a really good drop back passer. Now, you know, the guy threw 26 interceptions in college, so let's not get too excited about him. Really, what they'll probably do is break him down, just start him all over and get him to do it the way they do it, and then find out whether he's can handle pressure. That's really what it comes down to. How well can these guys handle pressure?
Yeah, and you and I got a chance to sort of see the wild fluctuation in his, you know, throwing consistency from, you know, we saw everything from really, really ugly ducks that were, you know, just spinning in ways that you wouldn't think a professional quarterback would spin a football. And then we saw, as you pointed out after practice one day, an absolute laser to the sideline. And so you can see the two ends of the spectrum with this guy. And, you know, with the situation, you know, Rodgers is, of course, going to make the 53. And then I would think at least one of Kizer and Hundley are going to make the 53. But I think this could be an opportunity where if he does play well, I don't think it's out of the question that he could be a practice squad guy for them.
Well, yeah, and he could play himself into a roster position too on the 53. What if he has the kind of camp that Taysom Hill had last year? Do they make that same mistake and risk losing him, or do they go ahead and keep him and get rid of either Hundley or Kizer, which I don't think is far-fetched. I think one of those two guys is the backup, and they don't go with the other as the third. I think you pick one who you think is better than the other, and you try to deal the other if he has any kind of camp. If they both have good camps, all the better, and you try to trade one of the other guys and get something for him. So, you know, and then develop the young guy if he's any good. So we'll find out. The one thing I liked about Boyle was just that when he drives the ball, that's when he's at his best. When he's throwing the ball hard, slants, corner routes, things like that, he seemed to be at his best. I think a lot of those ducks, you see that from a lot of guys early on because they're of indecision with their with the new offense. I don't think it's as much physical or mechanics. I think it's often indecision, and that's the kind of thing he's got to pick up right away.
Yeah, and you know, this will be a challenge for Cignetti, the new quarterbacks coach, you know, because Van Pelt had been here for a number of years and had gone through that breaking down process that you talked about in terms of, you know, reworking a guy's footwork or perhaps adjusting the arm angle, things like that. And so now it's a chance for Cignetti to do that for the first time alongside Mike McCarthy. So that'll be interesting to watch as well. And I really agree with your point on Hundley or Kizer. I would be pretty surprised if both of those guys make the 53-man roster. And given, you know, what they did to go and get, you know, Kizer, not that they necessarily gave up the farm or anything, but if both guys have a good camp, or if both guys, you know, if whatever the performance is, whether it's good, bad, or in the middle, if it's somewhat close between the two guys, I would just kind of think that the tie would go to Kizer because they've seen Hundley at this point. They obviously liked Kizer last year, according to Gutekunst, and, you know, they wouldn't go and get him if they didn't want to at least give him a chance. So, you know, I think Hundley would, in my opinion anyway, would have to maybe outplay Kizer by a fairly decent margin to take a roster spot over him.
Yeah, I think it's a great situation for them because they put both of them under the magnifying glass and put a lot of pressure on them and say, you know, the winner gets a roster spot. Now, the worst case scenario is if they both lay an egg, then you're in trouble because then you're picking, you know, based on, okay, who won't lose us a game, or, you know, you're just kind of in a spot that you don't want to be in. So they'll keep their fingers crossed that one of these two guys gets his act together and plays like an NFL quarterback. That'll be an interesting, I think, kind of entertaining race in camp.
I agree. And, you know, even though Hundley has had, you know, his handful of starts here, Kizer has started more games as an NFL quarterback. Now, obviously, a different offense and a different franchise, and didn't win any of those starts, but it's not as if he hasn't been there before. Do you think that the fact that he has started, you know, a dozen games or whatever it came out to, do you think that that will accelerate his learning curve when it comes to the Packers offense, or is it kind of unrealistic to expect that a guy will look crisp or look, you know, really good in OTAs? It might take all the way until training camp.
Yeah, I don't think Kizer will have trouble with their offense. He's pretty bright guy from what I've been able to tell. I think, again, it's going to be which one of these guys is more consistent, because both of them are wildly inconsistent. They're Kizer has made some terrible decisions in his time with Cleveland, and so has Hundley. And it's Hundley actually, I mean, really has more time in the league than Kizer does.
Yes, absolutely.
So while Kizer has more starts, you know, Hundley's been around. He's been around Rodgers. He should be ahead of Kizer. And I think Kizer has more talent, more dropback ability than Hundley does. But we'll see. I mean, nothing will be decided until the final day, I think.
So that's definitely one to keep an eye on when it comes to position battles. Let's touch on Rodgers really quickly, because the news of the Matt Ryan contract, of course, sort of sets the stage now where Rodgers and his agent and Russ Ball can now, you know, really begin their little dance back and forth here to try and get this done. So with Ryan's deal the way that it was in terms of the money, you know, hitting $30 million a year on average, and the guarantee of, what was it, $100 million, I think it was guaranteed. You know, how does that sort of influence, you think, the negotiations with Rodgers and the Packers?
I'm of one, maybe I'm in the minority, but I just think this thing will take care of itself. I think it's really just a matter of a little bit of posturing and figuring out exactly how they're going to structure it, and arguing over the structure, and ultimately it's going to work out for both sides. And Rodgers, I think he's not going to sell himself short. I think he's got things he wants to do after he's retires, and I think he wants to, you know, he showed through his investment in the Bucks that he might be interested in doing more things like that later on. So I think that he won't be sold short, and I don't think the Packers intend to sell him short. I think it's really just going to come down to structure, and ultimately they'll agree on that. I don't think it'll be too big of a distraction. I think one of the things that could be different about this offseason is that, you know, the Packers are kind of have broke down their offense, have as McCarthy sort of said, they stripped it down and started over. And I think they're going to need Rodgers to take more snaps than he normally does, because there's going to probably be some new things and things they want to experiment with him and get him involved. So he may be more active in these OTAs than he has been in the past.
That's a great point, and I remember the quote from Mike McCarthy. I can't remember if it was at the Combine or maybe it was the owners' meetings, but he gave this long explanation about how he and Joe Philbin basically went through the playbook and they, to each other, had to defend every single thing in there, whether it was the name of a concept or the concept itself or why they, you know, have certain alignments and things like that. And so it really was sort of taking what they had and trying to, you know, rationalize why they had it. And if they couldn't, then they added new things, you know, took things away, and made a lot of changes. So that's actually a really, really interesting point when it comes to Rodgers and the amount of time that he's going to have to play. And then, of course, there will be lots and lots of discussion on whether or not that translates into more snaps in the exhibition games.
Yeah, right. Yeah, more than likely, I don't think it's going to be anything that Rodgers can't handle through OTAs. I think by training camp, you know, they'll have all those installations, and it's not like they're changing their offense.
No.
The concept, you know, the West Coast aspect of it, I think they're just cleaning it up.
Yeah, and you know, the thing you mentioned about, you know, Rodgers and his contract having long-term interests, you're starting to see that more and more with crossover athletes. You know, Floyd Mayweather has expressed interest in being a minority owner for an NBA team. LeBron James bought a minority stake in Liverpool, a team in the English Premier League. So that's something that you're starting to see with top athletes, and perhaps Rodgers is sort of the next in line there. So what does that dilute your share of the Bucks down to, Tom?
Yeah, well, what else are you going to do with $100 million? I mean, what, you can only buy so many iTunes songs with that. It's like eventually you got to do something. So why not
Yeah,
buy yourself a
exactly.
team and play general manager for a while?
So let's stick on offense and let's take a look at the guys that these quarterbacks will be throwing to. Now, this is a very, very crowded position. I've got the roster in front of me. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 guys right now, at that position, three of which being the rookie draft picks. Man, I don't know what to think about the position battle here because aside from Randall Cobb and Devontae Adams, I don't think anybody's assured of a roster spot.
No, it's really wide open, and I think there's a little bit of reason for concern because rookie wide receivers don't usually just tear it up. I mean, you look at some of these guys like Amari Cooper. He wasn't he didn't absolutely go crazy his first year. Julio Jones was pretty good, but you're talking about a generational receiver in Julio Jones. Really, you're not going to see it's unlikely to see a guy with 70 catches, 80 catches, especially when you're talking about fourth round and beyond. So they're going to really count on Jimmy Graham, and I don't know how that whole thing's going to shake out. They may have to pick up a veteran at some point if those rookies don't come through the way they hope.
I wondered if they would just consider picking up a veteran for a mentorship, leadership kind of thing, because, obviously Devontae Adams has been around the block at this point with 5 years of experience, or going into his fifth year rather. But I mean, it's not as if the guy is an 8, 9, 10 year pro the way that James Jones was when he was here my first season in 2015. So I don't know if they would want to, quote unquote, waste a roster spot on a veteran that may not contribute a whole lot, but with three rookies and young guys in Allison and Michael Clark and D'Angelo Yancey, a fifth round pick from last year, I just wonder if there could be, benefits from a leadership standpoint and a mentorship standpoint the way that Devon House did last year.
Yeah, and I think with the number of, there were some pretty decent middle round wide receivers, not many first rounders, but those will take some jobs, and that's going to knock a few veterans out of position and probably put them on the market. So I think that's something they'll be able to watch all through training camp, and it's very possible that someone will come through for them that they like. And of course they're going to let their rookies compete and find out what they have with them first. Then they'll take a look, and probably if they don't like what they see, and consider a veteran.
So when we were at mini camp last week, or rookie camp rather, our colleague Ryan Wood, he and I had a conversation about just sort of how big these receivers were, because you look at Jamon Moore being the smallest at 6'2¾", and then Equanimeous St. Brown and Marquez Valdes-Scantling are 6'4" and 6'5". And so he posed the question of what do I think that means for Michael Clark, who of course was, the 6'6" project that they had last year, promoted to the active roster late in the season and then got a chance to play in those last two regular season games. And I was of the mind that I don't necessarily think that they would cut him unless he was really, really bad, having already invested a year in him. And Ryan sort of went the other way and thought that by drafting these three guys, it could signal the end of Michael Clark, because these are quote unquote better Michael Clarks because they were drafted. What do you think of how these big physical receivers could influence Michael Clark's future?
Yeah, let's. I could see it both ways. I think Michael Clark was an interesting guy physically, and I think it's not a coincidence that they went big this way because they liked what Michael Clark brought, but they didn't necessarily get anything out of him because he's really not a very good football player. He's just not. He's not ready at this point. And I don't know if he ever will be, but I think it could be a situation where if he doesn't make much progress during the off season that they let him go before training camp. But it doesn't hurt him to bring him to camp either. And why not? You know, you might as well take a look and see if he's made any great improvement. I mean, they kept bringing Reggie Gilbert back, and, you know, he spent, what, 2 years on the practice squad?
Yeah.
And finally, you know, it clicked in for him. And now they really like him. So, you know, sometimes it's worth it just to keep a guy around, especially if you've got room for him. And there's always room for wide receivers in camp. They use a lot of wide receivers in camp.
And then sort of the guy that, you know, gets shuffled into the pack a little bit is D'Angelo Yancey, the fifth-round pick from Purdue last year. He really struggled with weight problems last season, and during that rookie camp last week, he was participating in a special teams drill, and one of the coaches said, after he ran by and he had a really good rep, the coach said, man, you know, you lost all those LBs. You're like a whole new person now. And so it's really taken, you know, legitimately a full calendar year for him to drop the weight he needed to and get conditioned, because he had ballooned all the way up to about 226 or 228 by the time he arrived last year, and I overheard him in the locker room saying he's down to about 213 now, which is a really significant difference for a wide receiver. So, I mean, what are his chances? Is he a Ted Thompson bust, or do you think that, you know, with this different body type, he could actually maybe make a run at this?
Well, you know, we saw a little bit of him during camp last year, but never anything that told you that this guy was going to be a great player.
Right.
And or even, you know, a regular, a guy who they could count on. He never stood out to me. And so I don't really have this impression of who he is and what he can do, because he just never caught my eye during the time he was here, and I never really focused on him very much. So I have to familiarize myself with his game. I remember, you know, he actually did pretty well on deep balls at Purdue.
Yes, he did.
That was kind of his, I think he had a pretty impressive average.
I think he was like 19 yards a catch at one point.
Yeah. And so I don't know. I am kind of interested to see what he does. He could be one of these guys who comes out of nowhere. And I mean, he is a fifth round pick?
Yes, fifth round.
You know, that's fifth round picks you hope make it. And maybe there's still something there. They obviously think there's something there because they kept him around.
So shifting over to the tight ends, you mentioned the importance of Jimmy Graham as sort of this oversized wide receiver, certainly a guy that probably will be split out more than he is in line. And then behind him, you have Lance Kendricks and Emmanuel Byrd in terms of guys that were on the roster last year. And then they have a pair of undrafted rookies, one from Youngstown State, Kevin Rader, and another from Miami of Ohio, Ryan Smith. Now, this strikes me as a position where I could easily see them picking up a veteran at some point, because I don't think any of those top three guys, Graham, Kendricks, or Byrd, are going to get it done from a blocking standpoint as well as Mike McCarthy would like. What do you make of this group in terms of, you know, the element that Martellus Bennett actually did bring when he was on the field last year?
Yeah, I think that's a position. I think that's a position that they're underestimating, that they're going to need more talent there. Graham is a wide receiver. I don't care what you say, what anybody says. He's a wide receiver, and that's the role he's going to play. He's big like a tight end, but he's not going to stand in there and block. Lance Kendricks will give you everything he's got as a blocker. You know, he will try and try and try, but there's limitations with him. And so Emmanuel Byrd, I don't know enough about.
He's even smaller than Kendricks. He's 240.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's capable. I mean, you don't have to be big to be a good blocker. You have to have some talent as a blocker, and you have to want to do it. All these tight ends now, they don't want to do it. They just want to run routes and run down the field. So I'm not sure how many teams actually really have decent blocking tight ends. What I think you're going to see is the Packers go with a little bit more six offensive linemen. And especially if, you know, they can get Jason Spriggs and Kyle Murphy and get those guys healthy and have a fairly deep offensive line, then you might see a guy like Spriggs be a sixth offensive lineman.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, who was the last good blocking tight end for the Packers? Because in my time here, I've seen Richard Rodgers, Andrew Corliss, Jared Cook, now Jimmy Graham, and then yeah. Martellus Bennett. Bennett was, you know, good, but didn't make it through a full season. Who can you think of that was really good maybe in the last 10 years?
Wow. Well, my memory's terrible on this kind of stuff, thinking back on guys. But, you know, Finley tried. I mean, a lot of people really criticized him for his effort and for his ability. But I thought he tried. Bennett has been the best run, tight end blocker right. they've had in I don't know how long. Probably since Ed West. You don't know him.
I don't know him.
He was called the Toolbox, and his tight ends coach used to call him Velcro, because once he got his hands on you, you were done. He was a great blocker, but I digress. They're in such a passing offense that they haven't really needed a tight end. Chimura was a good blocker back in the day. I can't, Bubba Franks was decent, but not great. They really haven't had a guy that I can remember. I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody.
You mentioned the, possibility of using six offensive linemen. So let's take a look at what could happen there. You know, from the left side to the middle, it's pretty solidified, barring injury, with Bakhtiari, Lane Taylor, and Corey Linsley. And then, as we've talked about on previous podcasts, the right side remains an open tryout, essentially. So the guys that they could use at guard could include Lucas Patrick, Justin McCray, Cole Madison, maybe even Kyle Murphy. And then at tackle, you look at Brian Bulaga, if and when his knee gets up to snuff after the ACL surgery. And then you have Kyle Murphy and Jason Spriggs potentially competing there. Let's start with guard. What do you think about, the depth or the players they have to choose from at that right guard spot?
Well, I think they start training camp or OTAs with Justin McCray as the right guard, and then probably Murphy or Spriggs as the right tackle. I don't think Bulaga's going to be ready. Maybe he'll be ready for the start of training camp, but even if he is, they're going to limit his snaps and bring him along very slowly. So I would say that ultimately it'll probably be some combination of Spriggs and McCray and Murphy in those two spots. And then Cole Madison, I guess we'll see how he does in the OTAs. Maybe he'll surprise them and jump in, do a Josh Sitton and just be so solid from the beginning that they throw him right into the mix. That's going to be worth watching, because those are two positions they got to solidify pretty quickly, because you want your offensive line practicing together for as much time as possible.
I'm interested to see how McCray does with the ability to focus almost exclusively on one position rather than, being thrown all over the line like he was last year. Now, he's still going to take reps at center because he's probably their best backup center at this point, either him or Lucas Patrick. But I think, not having to take many reps or any reps at tackle, could really benefit him, because I just think that for the jump in the learning curve that he had going from the Arena League to not playing football to the NFL to then being shuffled essentially across the entire line, I can imagine that was maybe system overload at certain times, and that's why I think the way he did perform was even more admirable, given that circumstance. So, I mean, if he's able to focus just on guard, and from what you've seen, do you think that, can Justin McCray be an equivalent with an average starting guard in this league, do you think?
Yeah, but I'm not so sure that they're not going to move him around and use him as a utility guy. I think they're so enamored with how versatile he is that it also allows them to keep one less offensive lineman probably than they want to keep and allows them to keep a player somewhere else.
You mean on
so
the 53,
I wouldn't
right?
be surprised to see him get, you know, diluted, his reps diluted at right guard or whatever, and that they play him everywhere. And it's going to, if that's the case, that hurts his chances to be a starter. But, you know, he handled everything so well last year. I think he would handle it again. And, you know, ultimately they'll play the guy who just plays the best all the way around.
So do you think maybe that his future in terms of, I guess his best value or the most value he can bring to the franchise would be similar to the role that they had with Don Barkley in terms of the first guy off the bench that they can plug in, you know, a bunch of different spots?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think even, you know, right tackle, they could put him in there. Left tackle, he's done it. I mean, it's not what you want, but he could do it. I think he's a backup at four different positions. I think he's left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. And I think he'll play almost all of those positions during camp. And, you know, really, I think probably from a talent or physical standpoint, Cole Madison is probably more suited to just be a starter. But I would never rule out Justin McCray just because of how tough he is. And he's a good run blocker. And he's probably going to get better. So
now you talk about the tackle position, and if Bulaga is not healthy by the start of camp, which I can't imagine he would be, that would be an extremely fast recovery from a torn ACL, especially given the level of care they took with Jordy Nelson to make him wait literally a full calendar year before he got back on the field again. So, I mean, you know, I think it probably comes down to Spriggs or Murphy for the starting job, at least when it comes to the beginning of training camp and, you know, obviously during OTAs in May and June. So now this is year three for Jason Spriggs, and once again he finds himself under the microscope, a former second-round pick that Ted Thompson traded up to get. You know, the saying in football is you always want to let go of a player a year too early rather than a year too late. Is this a make or break for Spriggs? Could they really cut a second-round pick, you know, if he doesn't do well in camp again?
Well, I think he'd have to really flop for them to cut him. You know, last year he did flop in training camp. He was really bad. I thought when he came back after his stint on IR, he played better, and then he got hurt again. But he was starting to play a little bit better when he got hurt the second time. It's a big year for him. He's a second-round pick, so he's always going to get the benefit of the doubt, and it's going to be – excuse me, it's going to be hard for them to part with him unless they're just absolutely certain that he can't play again or that he can't play at all. So I think he's the leading candidate for right tackle going into camp, but he has a lot to prove. He's certainly probably the most athletic guy they've got, and now he's got to translate it into being a player.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that unless he completely fell all over himself and looked, you know, really, really bad, I find it hard to believe they would cut him just because, you know, of the resources they gave up in the trade to go and get him. And it would be, you know, it would be an admission of failure, essentially, if they never got anything valuable out of him in two-plus seasons. So that'll definitely be another position battle to watch between him and Murphy for the right tackle spot. And then last but not least on offense, another loaded position is running back. You know, you've got Ty Montgomery, Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, Devontae Mays. If it's me, and if he's healthy, I think Aaron Jones gives you the most burst there. But I think the best three-down back is probably Jamal Williams at this point. So I don't know what they do with Ty Montgomery. I'm not sure how he factors in. But what are your thoughts on that position right now?
I'm with you on that. I'm big into Aaron Jones. I just think guys who break off 20-yard runs at the rate he did last year are extremely valuable. He's got to be more durable. He had a couple of MCLs, and he's had an MCL in the past. And I remember asking Ben Sermons about that towards the end of the year, and basically said that he's got to build up his lower body, and so that he can withstand some of those hits against his knees and thighs, because really all those, that injury is just an injury from getting hit in along the side, and it's not as structural as an ACL, but he you know, he has to be tougher than that. He's got to be able to withstand that. Someone like Jamal Williams was really tough, I thought, and Devontae Mays is run so low, I don't know how anybody could even get to his knees. But Jones is the guy with, you know, breakaway talent, and they haven't had a guy like that probably since Amon Green, and they need that in their offense. But Jamal Williams right now is the most reliable, so I think he's the starter. Montgomery, I don't know. They're going to probably waste a lot of time using him at running back, and maybe may even put him at the starting position to start training camp. But I think that's a mistake. I think you'd use him as a utility player, get him on special teams. He's got the ability to be a really good special teams player. He doesn't cost you that much. I wouldn't mess around all that much with him as a running back.
You and I totally agree on this. I think his best role on this team would be, you know, an ace special teams player. We've seen him block a punt. We've seen him return kicks. He's obviously built like a tank in terms of the strength that, you know, required to block guys or hold guys up near the line of scrimmage. And then on offense, I think 5 to 6 touches a game. I think that's his wheelhouse. You know, maybe it's 2 carries or 3 carries and 2 receptions. Maybe it's 3 receptions and 1 or 2 carries. But 5 to 7 touches a game is, I think the most that he should get, because A, you know, he has durability concerns, obviously, but B, I just don't think you want to take Aaron Jones off the field at running back unless it's maybe an obvious passing situation and you want better pass protection with Jamal Williams. But I agree. For whatever reason, he strikes me as, aside from Brett Hundley, the player that they're willing to invest the most in, Ty Montgomery might be next in terms of time spent.
Yeah, and frankly, I think I'd move him to wide receiver because of the lack of experience you have there, and I would give him a chance to play there. That's where he played in college. This whole running back thing was done out of necessity, and while he's a big physical guy and maybe does have some running back ability, his need this year is probably going to be more at wide receiver.
All right, so let's flip over to the defense, and we'll start up front, which is where the Packers have the most depth. You're looking at a starting line that could be Kenny Clark, Mike Daniels, and Muhammad Wilkerson. Then, of course, you have Dean Lowry. They used a 7th-round pick on James Looney. They still have Montrevious Adams, a 3rd-round pick from last year. So, you know, given the issues that we'll talk about later at pass rush and corner, I feel like they have to be pretty confident with what they have up front.
Yeah, they should feel pretty good about it. They've got, they know they have something with Kenny Clark. I mean, this guy, I think, has a chance to be a really good player for a long time. He's young. He's improved a lot. He's going to be more versatile in the years to come, not just a nose tackle. They got Mike Daniels. They already know what they have there. Wilkerson is a question mark, but he's a guy who's done it and been a force, a pass rushing force. So at least you got that going for you. And I actually think the whole, maybe part of the variable here and a key guy will be Adams, because they really liked what they saw when he first came out and how he was getting off the ball and giving some pass rush. And then, you know, when he played coming off that foot injury, he just wasn't the same guy, and he wasn't an effective player. He's got a really, if he can come through for them and show some of what he did in the offseason last year, then they got a chance to have a really deep unit.
Yeah, I remember you wrote a story where you talked to Ricky Jean-Francois and I think it was Kenny Clark about some of the pass rush ability that Montrevious Adams had, and they were complimentary to the point where you don't usually see that level of praise for a rookie coming from, you know, more veteran players, especially with the with Ricky Jean-Francois having been around the block so many times. So there is obviously talent there when it comes to pass rush ability, and he can be sort of an X factor at that position. You know, and Lowry is, I think, your solid backup, a guy that, you know, is probably not at the level of an NFL starter in this league, but can be a serviceable backup for them. And we'll have to see how that plays out. Do you think that if Wilkerson gives them any pass rush, I guess, do you think that's at all what they're banking on, given, you know, sort of the thinness at outside linebacker?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the discussion during the draft and after the draft was about edge rushers and how the Packers don't have edge rushers. But that's the assumption that they're going to be a 3-4 team all the time. I actually think they'll play to the strength of their defensive line and may actually be more of a 4-3 team next year. I think Patton will use the best pass rushers he has, and the best pass rushers he has right now are on his defensive line. With Clark, I think Clark will become a better pass rusher. Daniels is obviously a pass rusher. Wilkerson is a pass rusher. Adams, they hope, is. And even Nick Perry is a guy you can put his hand down and rush as a wide end. I would not be surprised if they play more 4-3 than we're used to seeing around here.
So if they did play 4-3, can you line up with Daniels, Adams, Clark, and Wilkerson? Can those four be across the front, or is there not enough difference in their body types and the way that they play?
I think you rotate in the middle. I think you'd have to have Lowry in there a little bit. You'd have to probably have Looney, if he makes the team, in there. You're going to need some run-stopping ability in there. But, you know, they'll probably be a pretty active team. They'll probably, you know, they may be one of these one-gap teams that, even though they're 4-3, that they're just pressure up the field all the time. And I don't know enough about Patton and how he's adapted to his talent, but that's supposedly what he's really good at. And so I think we'll see all kinds of combinations of guys across the front, and especially, you know, the two guys in the middle. I think we'll see a lot of rotation there.
So let's move to the edge a little bit. And, of course, they have Nick Perry, as you mentioned, who could line up with his hand in the dirt as a wide defensive end in a 4-3. And on the other side, they have Clay Matthews. The other pass rushers that they're going to have to count on, Kyler Fackrell again, now in his third season, and Vince Beagle going into his second season, although, you know, in some ways it's his first season because he didn't have a single one rookie practice, you know, to get through all of the spring and summer months last year. So this is huge for him. And, you know, honestly, they still have Chris Odom, but those four guys that I mentioned, I think that's about it for them in terms of what they have on the edge.
Yeah.
Well, Reggie Gilbert.
About
him
gotta
as well.
Consider him. I can see them. So they can use their defensive line and first and second down, and then I can see them, you know, and if they do go 4-3, they could go with, an under defense where Clay Matthews is actually like a weak side linebacker off the line of scrimmage. And, you know, they have all kinds of options they can do like that. And then on third down, they play like a straight nickel where they use two edge rushers, Perry and Matthews or Gilbert or whatever combination. I think the Beagles and Gilberts will be special, and Fackrells will be specialty players, guys who come in on third down, maybe for some teams where they really want to play more of a 3-4 look or a nickel look that don't run the ball that well and are heavy passing teams. Maybe they'll go with more athletic guys. So I am really interested to see how that goes, how Patton moves guys around. That'll be a really interesting thing to watch during OTAs.
You know, the fact that you mentioned Perry being able to play with his hand down just reminded me that Reggie Gilbert played with his hand down for 4 years in college. That's what he was. He was a defensive end with his hand in the dirt, played a lot of four technique, you know, and so he's bigger than Perry in terms of size. He's up over 260, he's around 261, I think. And so he could be another guy that they could potentially use in a more 4-3 specialist situation. And, you know, everybody in the press corps heard the quote from Mike McCarthy in terms of what he thinks of Reggie Gilbert and said that from a leadership standpoint, from a development standpoint, from the way he approaches things in terms of taking advantage of every opportunity, it doesn't sound like the coaches could be any more pleased with what Gilbert has given them, you know, so far in his career.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on the comparison with Perry.
Okay.
Because Perry's a legit 265. He's played at 270. He is a powerful, powerful man. Probably one of their strongest guys they've got pound for pound. And so I don't know if Gilbert can do what Nick Perry can do at the point of attack.
That's
I think
a fair
Gilbert's
point.
A little bit more of a rusher type. Now, that doesn't mean he can't play end in passing situations or, you know, put his hand down like Perry. But Perry is, to me, their best run playing outside linebacker and a really powerful guy. So Gilbert would have to really show something to be able to regularly put his hand down.
I'll tell you what intrigues me about OTAs and training camp is if they would never do this, but I would love to just see Kendall Donerson race all their defensive backs. Wouldn't you just like to see a guy that's 249 and runs 4.45 outrun some of their corners?
Oh, I saw him in a couple times in the rookie orientation camp. A poor left tackle. I mean, it was some guy, some tryout guy, and it was embarrassing. I mean, he just ran right by him, and no quarterback is going to get away from him if he's scrambling. And,
not a
and
chance.
Donerson is running after him. Question is, can he play football? You know, when he's up against David Bakhtiari, that's going to be a little bit of a difference than the guy who was playing from Southwest Missouri State or wherever he was from.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a massive adjustment for him. But, man, that guy is an athletic marvel.
And yeah, he can fly. Boy, he would be good on special teams.
I was just going to say the same thing. If you talk about, you know, them liking Gilbert – or, excuse me, Fackrell on special teams because they said he can run, this guy is in a different speed class altogether. So that's definitely an area where he could help the Packers immediately if the pass rush skills come a little bit more slowly. When you look at the inside, you've got Blake Martinez, and then you've got Oren Burks, and then you've got Jake Ryan. I think it's pretty clear that Blake Martinez is going to be a massive part of this defense based on what he was saying in terms of Pettin potentially wanting him to wear the communication helmet and given the durability he showed last season. But I've only seen Oren Burks a very short time, and we've only we only have television clips to go back and look at him in college, but I think this kid could be a player for him.
He's got a lot of potential. He's you know, the long arms, the speed, but I'm not sure if he can be an every down player. If whether he's just a specialty guy who comes in on third downs, you know, a Joe Thomas type of guy. I don't know if that's going to be the case. He'll have to, he will play a lot in the middle in camp, and I guess we'll find out whether he can play the run. But they haven't had a guy with his really pass coverage ability. Joe Thomas was close, but Joe Thomas did not have the length and size that this guy does. So I think, you know, when you project him as a third down player, a nickel player, dime player, and then see whether you can get anything more out of him.
So does the fact that the Packers used a third round pick on him, would that indicate that at least in their mind he's capable of being a three down player, or is today's league so specialized and so spread out that you can actually use a third round pick on a guy that may not be able to play 100% of snaps?
Well, he's a developmental guy because, you know, I mean, he was a safety how long ago? One or two years ago, right?
Yeah, and before that he was a defensive end at times too.
Yeah, and so I think he's one of those guys that if they can get nickel play out of him first year, great. You know, down the road, they'll probably hope that he can be an every down player. But for the immediate future, he's just a guy with some physical talents that they don't have and that they can put to use. They have other guys they can play inside if he can't play every down. Maybe he surprises them and does play every down. I think they project him as an every down player, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen right away.
So it could be a situation where you have Martinez and Ryan in on first down, and then maybe Burks comes in for second and third?
Yeah. And, you know, if they're playing that 4-3, if they do play some 4-3, then you've got, you know, Matthews Martinez. And, you know, really, even you could play Burks in that situation, or it could be Perry, or it could be Fackrell. You know, there's all kinds of different combinations you could use.
Boy, I mean, if they do start playing 4-3, could you imagine Donerson's speed in a 4-3 if there's any way that he could play, you know, off the ball?
Yeah. They play him in a wide nine, you know, situation, or they blitz him off the edge with someone like Matthews on his inside or outside. Right. Yeah, he could have an impact.
Now, of course, this is a guy that is a seventh round pick and was a seventh round pick for
yeah.
a reason.
He yeah, may not like even make the team,
but I just get so excited because he's so darn fast.
Yeah, you have to think about Kabir Bajabiamila, who was just a late flyer that Ron Wolf took in the seventh round, and the guy came on and became their all time leading rush. Sack guy. So you never know.
So let's move back on defense a little bit and take a look at the corner spot. They obviously used a first and second round pick on Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson. They signed Tremont Williams. They still have Quentin Rollins coming off the ACL. They've got Lindsey Pipkins. They've got Devon House. They've got Kevin King, Josh Hawkins, Dimitri Goodson. The names go on and on and on at this group. Donatello Brown, Herb Waters is still in the mix somehow. this is a competition that could rival wide receiver in terms of the depth that they have, just in terms of number of bodies, not necessarily overall talent.
Yeah. It's going to be a competition for playing time first and then for roster spots. And it should be pretty good. Let's not fool ourselves. Jair Alexander is going to be on the field.
No
one
question.
Way or another. He's going to be their slot corner more than likely, if not a starting cornerback. Kevin King's going to be on the field regardless, unless, you know, we're talking about being healthy. Those two guys are going to be on the field. Who's on the field with them, that will be determined through camp. And they've got a lot of different body types, different amounts of experience. This could be one of those things where they could week to week go with matchups and decide how they want to play, you know, which guy matches up better with the other. And, you know, Tremont Williams still has some talent left, and House, when he was healthy, was solid. So I don't know. There's a lot to be decided amongst this group.
What was Tremont best at during his first stint with the Packers, and what do you think he could be best at now, given his age of 35?
Well, he was a good press player. He wasn't the kind of guy who necessarily got his hands on you, but, you know, like Joe Whittle talk about how you can press with your feet, and that was kind of Tremont Williams. He was up on you, and he could run with you. And smart player. Over time he learned how to his route recognition was really good. Towards the end, he got a little bit sloppy with some of his stuff, but I think over the last 3 years, he's just learned a lot more about playing the game, and he still has enough physical talent to at least, you know, be in there and give you some quality snaps. You know, he's going to get beat, but from time to time, but I think he would be a steady person there. I think you'd know what you have with him all the time. Whereas Alexander's going to make some plays and then he's not, and he's going to get beat. You know, you just won't always know what you have with him. You know, you have a heck of a lot of talent there, but you're just probably not going to get completely consistent play.
I think you're probably able to draw some comparisons in terms of the situation surrounding Quentin Rollins and Jason Spriggs, in that both guys were second round picks. Both have, you know, underachieved, I would say, at this point in their career. Both are coming off injuries, with Spriggs having the dislocated knee and Rollins having the torn Achilles. Do you think that at this position, given what they've invested recently in King, Alexander, and Jackson, does a second-round pick like Rollins going into the final year of his rookie deal still get the same benefit of the doubt that second-round pick Spriggs gets going into the third year of his rookie deal?
Probably not, because one, he's coming off a pretty catastrophic injury. The other is Spriggs gets the benefit of the doubt because he's just such a phenomenal athlete. And Quentin Rollins is not a phenomenal athlete. He's a really solid athlete with a lot of some potential that they overestimated, I think. I've said this, and I don't know it. I mean, I'm just speculating on my own, but I kind of wonder whether he's going to get moved to safety, if that might be a better position for him. You know, one of those guys who can come down and possibly blitz from a slot position, or just maybe the play, if the play is in front of him, he'll be better. I don't know. That'll be something to watch, too. They'll give him a chance. I mean, he's a second-round pick. You got to give him a chance. But, boy, that injury is – that's a tough one to come back from.
The safety idea is one that I think definitely, you know, has some legs to it. I went back the other day, and I looked at our old colleague Bob McGinn's scouting series from that year to read what the scouts had told him about Rollins. And I can't remember if he interviewed 7 scouts, 8 scouts, or 9 scouts, but all of them but one, whatever the number was, either 7 out of 8 or 8 out of 9, all of them said he was a safety instead of a corner.
Really?
Every single one. It was, you know, where does he project best? Safety. Oh, this guy's probably a safety. Oh, this guy is a safety. And it was just really funny reading that. And I know that there's some people within the Packers organization that think the same thing, that he would be best at safety. Now, whether Pettine and Joe Witt, you know, agree with that, we'll find out. But that was obviously what the majority of the league projected him at coming out of college, and the Packers seemed to go a different way. So that's another one that we'll have. That we will have our eyes on going into camp. Let's look at safety. Let's wrap this up here. Obviously, HaHa Clinton Dix is going to be your starter on one side. I would say most likely, I don't know. I don't want to say most likely. Josh Jones or Kentrell Bryce, I guess, will start at the other safety spot, and then they still have Jermaine Whitehead and Marwin Evans. So following the departure of Morgan Burnett, do you think that they have anybody that can be even kind of relied upon at this point with any sense of regularity?
I think Kentrell Bryce is their smartest guy, the guy who won't blow assignments. I don't know if he's we know he can run. I don't know if he's got to clean up his tackling, stop going for kill shots and things, but he is far more instinctive player than Josh Jones is. Josh Jones just is a very physical, explosive player, and you want to try to get him on the field if you can. So it'd probably be some combination of those two guys based on matchups. Clinton Dix, you know, there'll be probably sometimes they want to use him closer to the line of scrimmage and sometimes not. I don't think I'd necessarily want Josh Jones as my deep safety all that often. So they'll have to figure out how they want to do that, but they have some options there. I don't think it's a great position for them. I don't see them having just a playmaking guy who's going to come up with 6 to 8 interceptions. I just don't see it.
It's obviously an important season for Clinton Dix. That goes without saying. But some of the reasons why I think it's are important. First of all, it's a contract year for him. The Packers exercised the fifth-year option on his rookie contract. So this is that fifth year, and he will become a free agent if the Packers don't extend him prior to next March. And then the second thing is, I think he really set himself up to be in a rough spot if he doesn't play well, based on some of the comments that he made. He has either flat out said or hinted very strongly that a lot of his struggles last year were because he had to cover for other people, whether it was Josh Jones or some of the issues that they had at corner. And if you make that comment, that's fine. But then I think if you don't have that excuse again this season, if the corners do play better, he really needs to step up, because otherwise that starts to look worse and worse and worse for him. What do you sort of make of the way he handles himself? I know McCarthy really praises him as a leader and things like that, but I don't think that he's necessarily the most media savvy guy in terms of some of the things that he says. It just doesn't strike me as the types of things that you should be saying if you want to be viewed as a guy that can unite the team.
Yeah. Well, with Tremont Williams, he'll now be the senior spokesperson for the secondary. Tremont Williams has always been really a stand-up guy, a guy who will give you everything you need to know, and players will listen to him. I'm sure Clinton Dix will try to take over a leadership role, but you got to perform too, and you can't just do it with talk. You have to do it with being one of the team's better players. That's how you become a leader. And he just needs to focus on playing and forget all the excuses. He's got to put last year behind him, because it wasn't a good year. And I don't care where he was playing, if he was 50 yards down the field, it doesn't matter. You still have to find a way to have an impact in the games, and he didn't have all that much of an impact. So I think the main thing for him is not about leadership. I think it's about finding his game and plan and making some impact on defense.
I agree, and let's not forget that when it comes to health and availability, he is by far the most reliable player they have on the back end of the defense. Plays 1,000-plus snaps every year. I believe he played every single snap last season, and 2 years ago he only missed like 2 snaps. So If he's able to find his game, and if he's able to get into a groove, the availability that he offers the coaching staff could be extremely beneficial, given what we've seen with Kevin King, Morgan Burnett's injury over the years. Obviously, Demarius Randall was in and out of the lineup. So, like I said, if he can find it, the potential is there for him to be a very influential player on this defense.
And just he needs, I think, the whole part about being leadership, I think that's covered with, I think House can provide that. I think Tremont Williams can provide that. And I think he needs to worry about playing the game.
And then let's wrap it up very quickly with special teams. Of course, the decision by Brian Gutekunst to release Justin Vogel at Vogel's request, following the draft pick used on J.K. Scott. And then Hunter Bradley, the long snapper, drafted despite 3 ACL tears and a 4th surgery on a meniscus. What do you sort of think of their specialists? Obviously, we know what they have in Crosby, so let's talk about the other two guys.
Well, it's a gamble to go with a drafted punter and let the other guy go, who's already proven he can punt in the NFL. To me, that is a gamble. And I'm old enough to have seen all the mistakes they've made in drafting punters. Now, of all the people, this guy is the most tested of anybody. Anybody you take from Alabama is game tested, pressure tested. But it's still, it's a different, for whatever reason, it's a different deal for punters. I mean, most of the punters, or a lot of the really good punters, are guys who weren't drafted or have been cut several times, and it just takes them some time. Now, sometimes you find a drafted guy who comes in and right away he's good and he lasts for a long time. I think of the guy at Sam Martin for the Lions.
Yeah.
You know, he's sort of that type of guy who just came in, they hit on it, and he's been their guy for, I think, 7 years now or something like that. You know, there's a few other guys, but, you know, you look at some of the other drafted guys, success hasn't been very good. And so there's a lot to be skeptical about with Scott. It's just that the one thing that whole thing about kicking at Alabama gives him something, you know, it makes you think that he's more ready than the average guy.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm sort of on record as thinking that in a business where scouts will tell you that they're wrong 50% of the time and they're wrong just as much as they're right, I just don't get drafting two specialists when you could take two swings at a pass rusher. Because if you're wrong 50% of the time, then it stands to reason that one of those two guys you drafted, if you took two swings at a pass rusher, would turn out to be a decent player. So that's personally the route that I would have gone. And, you know, from a medical standpoint, I'm pretty surprised that they were willing to take a guy that has had four knee surgeries, given both the skepticism of their medical department when it comes to guys that have medical issues, and also just the cautiousness with which they approach the guys on their roster. I mean, I guess you could argue that Montrevious Adams and Vince Beagle and Kevin King all sort of had issues very early in their career, but four knee surgeries at a position where your goal was to get more athletic, just I don't get that.
Yeah, I don't either. I thought that was really kind of a mistake. I don't know what they saw that was so great. I mean, I don't even see a great 40 time on him.
No.
He needs to get bigger because he's got to be able to block. I'm not sure what they saw. Maybe, I mean, we'll give them the benefit of the doubt because they supposedly know what they're doing. But I agree that they could have taken a couple flyers on someone else, or taking a flyer on someone else, a more important position, and risked having this guy, you know, trying to sign him after the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. And honestly, worst case scenario, excuse me, if they did have to go back to Brett Goode, is Brett Goode so unathletic that he's making that much of a difference in the outcome of your season? I mean, maybe a play or two here or there, sure, but I don't get it personally. But there you have it. An hour and 8 minutes breaking down the Packers roster ahead of OTAs. Did we miss anything? We didn't talk about fullbacks, I know that, but
yeah. I'm not so sure we have to.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Ripkowski's gonna have to be unseated somehow, and I'm not sure that I see that happening.
Agreed. So there you have it, short and sweet on the fullbacks. That takes you through the entire roster. Is there anything else we need to touch on, Tom?
No, I suppose we could just go through the schedule. So they've got the outdoor OTA start in about the third week in May, correct?
Yeah, I believe the first one is like the 20th or the 21st.
Okay. And then they go for, what, about 4 weeks? And then they've got the mandatory mini camp.
Yep.
In mid-June.
Yeah, let
maybe
me pull
the third week of June.
Yeah, I got the dates here. I just pulled them up. So their first OTA is May 21st to 23rd, then May 30th to the 31st, also June 1st, so essentially May 30th to June 1st, June 4th to 7th, and then the mandatory mini camp is June 12th to 14th.
June 12th through the 14th. Okay.
So what, one of those each time is open to the public, right?
Yes, right. Each week, right? One practice each week?
Yeah, they haven't released the schedule yet, but that's been the trend. So you'll have one day between May 21st and 23rd, one day between May 30th and June 1st, one day between June 4th and June 7th, and one day between June 12th and 14th. Or no, wait, is the mandatory minicamp completely open?
Yes, 3 days.
So yeah, there you go.
Usually 3 days.
So, as Tom mentioned earlier, it could be a time when Aaron Rodgers is more involved, so perhaps there could be a little bit more excitement to these OTAs relative to what they've been in the past. And yeah, if it's the weather's nice, come on out and say hello. Be sure to check out all of our coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com. We'll cover you through mid-June before we start to take our little break for the summer. We thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Packers Podcast, and we will talk to you soon. Girls, have you ever broke up with your boyfriend and you felt that the world was coming to an end? Sitting around the house packed for no reason, just because you thought your man was skeezing for a couple of days, look gloomy and gray, thinking about the old happy days. All of a sudden, the telephone ring, he begged for your forgiveness, and you know what that brings, joy and happiness. And